Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Basu and Gadai Notebook on this Friday, January 26, 2024. I am Marc-Antoine Gadai with Arpin Basu as usual. Arpin, did you feel the emotion with Patrick Roy last night?
Yeah, of course. How could you not? It was a really nice touch from the Canadians, I thought, doing it during the anthem. And actually, there was a comment on my story on The Athletic that I thought was really good, how the commenter took the lyrics of the anthem, and he liked how the photos of Patrick Roy were lined up with "Ton front est saint de fleurons glorieux" and all these things. It was like it was the imagery and the lyrics lining up was another touch that I actually hadn't noticed. So, but yeah, I thought it was really great.
I'm glad you read the comments. It's good to know.
I do read the comments. Yeah, I don't always respond, but I do read them. And so, but yeah, I thought a really nice touch in the way it was done. And it was done in a way that didn't make it a thing. Like it wasn't an added layer to the game. And I think that was, kind of respecting Patrick Roy, the way he was viewing it, that he didn't really want it to be about him, but it was impossible to not make it about him. And so the Canadians, they had to do something. And I thought the way they did it, incorporating it into the normal routine of the game, was really nice. And obviously the crowd, being the Montreal crowd, stepped up again and made it for a nice moment. And I think made Patrick Roy feel very uncomfortable. And so mission accomplished, if that was the goal, because I think he would have much rather just started the game, but a very nice moment.
Yeah, for sure. And you cannot, it's a bit weird, when it comes to a legend of this magnitude, to celebrate, where celebrating him as a chance to create really a potentially a moment, a momentum shift. Mm-hmm. So doing it at any other point in the game, once the game has started, starting celebrating the other team's head coach is risky for your own team. So doing it during the anthem was safe territory. It was a good move.
Well, also that it's not Patrick Roy's first game back. Coached in the building before, and so it's normal. When a player comes back, yes, it's first TV timeout. They do that, and it's always a nice moment and everything. But this was different. This was just Patrick Roy got a job, and he's coaching a team against the Canadians, which he's done three times before. Not that many, but it's three times before. But hadn't happened in 7 years. So they had to do something, and I think they did it well. And also maybe got in Patrick's kitchen a little bit by doing it. I don't know. But, it's also it's one thing, when they did it for PK Subban, he has like tears streaming down his face right before the game. You can imagine that probably affected how he played right off the bat. I don't think it really affected how Patrick coached right off the bat.
No.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah. All right. So, let's say enough with Patrick Roy, but we'll keep one aspect of last night's game to start our discussion, because obviously the hit that Brendan Gallagher inflicted on Adam Pellick was a turning point in the game. Blindside hit to the head, elbow in the face. Gallagher's skates lifted off the ice. Pellick didn't have the puck. It was really the whole shebang.
Yeah.
So earlier today we learned that the that he would get an earring a hearing with the NHL, which is no surprise. It's a telephone call. It's not an in-person hearing, which means that he's going to be given a suspension of 5 games or less. Maybe that at the time that you listen to this podcast, the suspension has already dropped. But
and we're recording at 3:45 p.m. on Friday. So just to give you a timeline, but yeah, we don't know what it'll be. But yeah, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. Just wanted to give that that little bit of information.
So I think that it doesn't change anything to the fact that if you objectively look at the hit, whether he gets 3 or 5 or even 3, 4 or 5 games, doesn't change anything to the fact that, in my opinion, it was worthy of more. And mm-hmm. the fact that guys are given sort of a pass because they don't have previous history with the Department of Player Security, it's something, it's an argument that seems to really have to go a long way with in terms of deciding the sanction. And last I checked, it's an exaggerated, I'll admit, it's an exaggerated example, but if you kill someone, the fact that you have not killed someone before, yeah. it doesn't factor in into the fact of what you did. So I'm going to the extreme here, but ultimately I find that, oh no, he hasn't done anything bad before, so hence the sanction this time will be easier. Yeah, I find that it weighs a lot sometimes.
You're assuming that the NHL runs, you know, our legal system is, you know, people might argue differently, but our legal system is based on common sense and logic. In much the same way, our legal system, if you assault someone but they're not injured, doesn't mean you get away with it. No, I mean, it's the same thing. You're still going to get charged with assault. Here, if you hit a guy and he escapes injury, more often than not, you're not getting a hearing and you're not getting suspended. So in this case, yeah, I agree. And we have precedent for it this season. I believe Charlie McAvoy got 4 games for his hit on Oliver Ekman-Larsson earlier this season. Was a bad hit, a really bad hit, probably deserved more. But McAvoy had no history, so hence
got 4 games.
Yeah. Or he did. Yeah, sorry. No, I don't think he did. Thought he didn't.
He had already. Okay.
But anyhow, keep going. Yeah. In this case, you know, I wouldn't. I'd be disappointed, but I, you know, actually, I'm not even going to speculate because probably a lot of you listeners probably already know the length of the suspension. But the fact it's not more than 5, I agree, is wrong. You can't. Everything in the checklist of a legal check to the head is checked off here. Elevating into the hit, leaving his feet, picking the head, elbow chicken wing coming out, blind side, puck was gone. Like, just go down the list of things that you can't do when you hit a guy, and he did it all. And so, and a greater issue, listen, this is not, you know, Brendan Gallagher doesn't have a history of doing this either, like this kind of thing. He's generally an honest player. He takes penalties, but dirty plays are not common with him. And even though he gets involved in rough stuff in front of the net or whatever, this is out of character for him. What is it? What is not, unfortunately, out of character for him, and what the Canadians, I feel, need to address, is this tendency to take penalties late in games when the Canadians are either trying to tie the game or the game is tied or they're coming from behind, and he effectively puts an end to that. And so in this case, obviously, they're trying to protect the lead, gets a 5-minute major, the Islanders score twice, they tie it, almost cost them the game. Were it not for Cole Caulfield, Josh Anderson, and Sean Monahan combining on the winning goal, might have gone overtime, the Canes might have lost. So, and I remember before the season, the day after Tanner Pearson was acquired from the Vancouver Canucks, I asked Martin St-Louis a question basically stating, when you have to decide between a veteran player like Tanner Pearson or a younger player on who's going to get a specific role, who's going to get in the lineup, how do you come down on that? How do you differentiate between the two aside from their performance on the ice. If it's relatively even, what's the tie break? And tie break for Marte, we said at that time, is, well, generally a veteran player has a track record, and that track record gives that veteran, because a veteran player is a veteran because he's done certain things for a long enough time that he's managed to stay in the league. And that track record gets him the benefit of the doubt. Brendan Gallagher has a long track record in the NHL, a long track record of being a team guy, a heart and soul guy, the heart and soul of the Canadiens for a long time. But this season, these are starting to pile up. And that hit, like, forget the hit itself, which we've already discussed, was bad. No one disagrees with that. But the time of the game, the necessity of it, all of it just speaks to some of Brendan's questionable decision-making late in games. When he is the guy who's supposed to be showing the way in that department, he's the one who's supposed to be setting the example for how you behave situationally late in a hockey game, especially that game. Like, forget Patrick Waugh, but the Canadiens coming off three really bad losses, identifying that game as a need to bounce back and put an end to this, for him to jeopardize that the way he did as a veteran with a track record is unacceptable. And yes, he's going to get consequences from the NHL, but, you know, we got to see, there's got to be some internal accountability. And I think Marty is not willing to share that publicly. I think that's something he's going to deal with Brendan himself, but the difference, the verbal gymnastics he went through after the game to avoid calling Brendan out for that penalty, and the ease with which he called out Arbor Jacki for his penalties, it was night and day. It was like completely, yeah. And it just goes back to that answer after the Tanner Pearson trade. A veteran gets the benefit of the doubt. Well, when a veteran keeps making the same mistake over and over again, Marty says this all the time, if that's when you got to step in, that's a trend, not a one-off. This is a trend, unfortunately.
It's certainly a trend. I didn't go into the penalties that he took while the Canadiens were on the power play. I don't know if he canceled the team's power play this year with a penalty. I believe he did once or twice. But in terms of the situation you described, here's his history for this season. So on November 14th, he had a tripping against Calgary with 3 minutes 12 left. Calgary was leading by 1. So the Canadiens could not come back from a 2-1 deficit because of that penalty. You remember he complained about the referee after the game. It was in Montreal, and he said, it's a terrible call. He cannot make that mistake because the ref, Pierre Lambert, was too far away from the plate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and he was right. Two nights after against Vegas.
He went on and on about it. Like, he really laid it on publicly, heavily, thick that night. Like,
for
really.
Sure. He was ready to take a fine for that.
Yeah.
For sure. But two nights after, against Vegas, he takes a double minor high sticking with 2:51 left. The Canadiens were leading 5-4. Vegas scored 2 goals, ended up winning.
Yeah.
That's two nights after. Then on December was quiet, but on January 13, he took a hooking with 1:49 left against Edmonton in a tie game. The Oilers did not score on that, but obviously it put the Canadiens in a tough spot.
And that power play went into overtime, right?
Exactly.
I
think Matheson got a penalty in overtime, and that's how the Oilers scored.
But that power play didn't they start overtime?
Yeah, they did. So ultimately it was, yes, obviously, well, there was 11 seconds left. But those are all and then yesterday. So you see, that's 4 instances in a single season where in the last 4 minutes, well, yesterday was not in the last 4 minutes, but it ended up.
It was a five-minute major. Yeah,
it's a 5-minute major with 8 minutes left. So it amounts to the same thing. I mean, it's puzzling, and the intention behind it, I don't know if they have a prior history, the two of them, or something happened during the game, but it was so deliberate. I have a hard time explaining that to myself.
It was deliberate and unnecessary. It was not in the flow of the game. Like, it's not, it's not, a, that's not a hit you normally make. You know, like there's cases where you finish a check, where you will hit a guy shortly after he passed the puck. In open ice like that, coming from the blind, like that's not that. That's not a case of that.
No,
that's just bad judgment and a bad hit. Like it's a technically bad hit. Like there's everything about that hit was bad and wrong. And like really the synapses in his brain, like one of the checklists should have been like, okay, Brendan, no, we're not doing this. We're not. Oh, you're bringing your elbow up. No, we're not doing this. Like there had to be some sort of firewall in his brain that said like, no, this is not the time for this, buddy. And that track record, that veteran track record is what should have made that firewall much stronger. And it didn't. And, and this goes back like, and, you know, I believe when was that game? I wrote about it. I think you wrote about it too, but the game where Joel Armia took for second game in a row, took a bad penalty that cost the team and didn't even miss a shift. Was right back out there as soon as he could. That game was in Florida, I believe, during the holidays. Same thing. And to Marty's credit, so there were no consequences for Joel Armia. And right now, Joel Armia is playing the best hockey I've seen him play in a really long time, probably since this 2021 playoffs. Like honestly, like this is the best version, the best stretch of Joel Armia games we've seen. And so maybe whatever discussions Marty had with him coming out of that situation, maybe that had a positive effect on him. Maybe that something sparked in him that triggered this kind of play to him. But man, it's there was another case of a veteran getting the benefit of the doubt. And that's a case that turned out okay, but there's like a certain culture of accountability that you want to create. And I don't know what's going to happen with Brendan Gallagher, but after the game and even today, I think Marty was very hesitant to call him out on it.
Yeah. There's that point that I've been harping on since the beginning of the season that Martin Saint-Louis has limited options when it comes to accountability because he just doesn't have the bodies to switch guys around the way they probably should and that he most certainly would. But it's just he saw Lucas Condotta, who was called up. He benched, he scratched Jesu Ylönen a few games, but he doesn't necessarily have the ammo to say, I'm going to promote some guys, give them larger responsibilities and punish the guys that I'm unhappy with. He can do that on defense to a certain extent, but all year round, it's been difficult.
I disagree. And I think I'll tell you why, because obviously, this doesn't apply to the game last night against the Islanders because Brendan Gallagher was kicked out of the game. He had a match penalty. So you can't bench a guy who's not in the game. But it's not as if Marty doesn't have a history of benching guys. They're just lower in the line. Like Michael Pezzetta gets benched every game almost. Yeah. And Christ, against Ottawa, he didn't play after the first period. You know, so Jesse Ylönen, when he was in the lineup, regularly got benched in the third period. It's not like he has no options. Are they good options? No, but
that's what I'm saying. Benching his worst players is a vote of no confidence for them. So after that, to give them not only a regular shift but additional shift in order to
only proves to, his point further. It only proves the point further. If you're willing to give Michael Pezzetta, Joel Armia's ice time or Brendan Gallagher's ice time, it proves your point further. That, well, I have a line that you cannot cross. You have crossed it, so I'm going to put this guy in your spot. And I don't care if he's not as good as you. I don't care if he won't do the job as well as you will. What you're doing is unacceptable. I have to draw a line in the sand. And so I think it just makes that point more impactful when you take a lesser player who you don't necessarily trust all that much and say, look what I'm willing to do. You have crossed a line so egregiously, I'm willing to do this. And when you're in a position where the Canadians are, they're not going to make the playoffs. They're trying to be competitive, and they are. Listen, they're a 500 team. They've stayed in and around 500 all season. They deserve some credit for that. I think that. But what
for a team that's looking for consistency, they sure are consistent at the 500 mark.
They're consistently mediocre, you know. And so it's like it's so. you know, like what do you have to lose doing that?
Yeah.
But what you have to gain is this idea of accountability and telling your younger players, listen, I'm not only hard on you. My rules don't only apply to you. They apply to everyone.
Yeah.
And so this is a different situation because obviously Brendan Gallagher is going to miss some time. Then the Canadians are on a bye week. Like Brendan Gallagher might not play a game for like 2 weeks more, perhaps, more, depending on what happens. I mean, it's, you know, like when their next game is scheduled for after Saturday's game, I believe they're playing on February 4th.
They're playing Washington. I think it's February 5th.
Yeah,
I have it. So February 6th against Washington,
so
and then
we can safely assume.
Dallas.
So I think we can safely assume Gallagher's at least going to miss the game against Washington. And if it's only that, then shame on you, NHL. Like honestly, if I'm, he should get five. Mm-hmm. He should get five, but he could not be play. He could be not playing until the week of February 12th.
I agree,
and so that's already a 3 week break in the middle of the season. I don't know what more Marty could do with him. Like, I don't know if when he comes back, he can't really say, oh, well, remember what you did 3 weeks ago? Well, now you're getting punished for it.
Of course not.
But it's, you know, it's an example needs to be made out of this like, in some way. I don't know how he does it, but it has to be because you can't just. How many questions was he asked about Gallagher after that game? He was asked four, five.
At least.
And as soon as he's asked one question about Arbor Jack guy taking two penalties a game after he took one, j'adore pas ça. You know, like it's just like came out of him. It's like, you know, but that's all he had to say about Brendan too. J'adore pas ça. You know, it would have been something instead of I have to see the video. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Really? You really have to see the video.
It's a fine line.
It's a fine line. That's not that fine.
In that case, it was not fine. It was not a line. It was a, my God. It was
a big, fat, broad line. And Brendan jumped clear over it, like way past it. So
it was a border.
Yes. It was a huge, thick line that he crossed.
So for a lot of fans, the reaction, clearly, it looked as though it was the final straw for a lot of fans regarding Brendan Gallagher, because let's face it, it's been a pivotal season in his career, trying to rebound from, you know, a couple of years where he was, you know, bothered with injuries and low performances. Mm-hmm. At times it looked as though he was sort of back on track, even though I think everybody understands that he'll never be a 30 goal scorer, you know, again, but there were spurts of very interesting effectiveness. I think that there are parts of his games that are still encouraging in the fact that, yes, he'll empty the tank on every shift and you'll feel as though, you know, he's exhausted when he goes back to the bench. But the first 30 seconds of his shifts, I find that he's gotten more jump than he did last year. Mm-hmm. And he's involved and whatnot. But there are three things to me that are really a deterrent to his overall performances. The first one is the indiscipline. We already touched on that. There's also the fact that if you look at the statistics, at the analytics between the goal for and the expected goal for, there's always a difference, obviously, between the two. Some players tend to have more goals for than expected, but the majority of them will have a tiny bit less real goal for than expected, because you know you score less than the opportunities you get. That's okay. But among the Canadians, Brendan Gallagher is really in a league of its own in the disparity between the goal for and the expected goal for. So for the total of the season, he's minus 14. So he's got 16 on the ice at 5-on-5. He's got the Canadians scored 16 goals when he's on the ice. The expected goals is at 30.39. So it's a bit more than 14. The next guy up on the team is Matheson at minus 8, then Slaff minus 6, Suzuki minus 5. So Gallagher minus 14. It means that even though he continues to generate or help generating a lot of chances, they're being converted a lot less. And as an impact to that, also, the other stat is that his good old plus minus is a team worst minus 21, which is along with a tally of Chicago players, San Jose players, and Anaheim players, he's 13, tied for 13 in the league in that department. So that doesn't look good at all.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I would say about the expected goals thing is that when you look at the individual expected goals, not the on ice, he's still right up there. I mean, his individual expected goals per 60 is 1.18. Austin Matthews is 1.2. Yeah. But Austin Matthews' actual goals are 1.81 per 60. These are all 5-on-5. And Gallagher's 0.73. But when you look at it individually on a per 60 basis, like 0.73 goals per 60 and 1.18 expected goals, the disparity is not as great as what you just described. It's just that he still generates chances. He still generates chances for himself. Yeah. He generates chances for his teammates. He is doing that, but he doesn't do it. They don't result in goals often enough where that chance generation, he needs other elements of his game. And the lack of discipline that you mentioned can't be an element of his game at this stage of his career. It just can't be. It just cannot be. I get that he does play on the edge, but he's not had this part of his game. Like, this hasn't been a part of his game previously. Like, usually as a younger player, you would take bad penalties. Like, Brendan Gallagher always got called for penalties, for sure. Mm-hmm. But generally didn't take bad penalties. Like, didn't take, like, unnecessary. Like, he took penalties that you kind of like to kill. Like, he took a penalty. He would take a penalty, like, battling for a puck or, you know, hustling back or, like, doing things that are just kind of, you know, when the penalty killers go out there, they're like, all right, let's get this one for Brendan, because he was working his bag off, and we're gonna kill this one for him.
Yeah,
the penalties he's taking now are just dumb. I mean, no penalty killer is motivated to kill the penalty when the penalty took place 200 feet from their net. It's some stick foul in the corner, some unnecessary hook that you just didn't want to move your feet on, or a blindside hit to the head in neutral zone when you're up two goals with less than 10 minutes left in the game. You know, I mean, it's just like so no one's expecting Brendan Gallagher to not take penalties. It's just he can't take dumb penalties, and he's taking them with relative frequency, and it just can't be an element of his game. It just can't. It's for him to, like, even come close to justifying the amount of salary cap space he takes up, he needs to be a positive influence on this room. He needs to be someone that can show the young players the way, that positive presence. And this is literally the opposite of what a positive veteran presence does, is take penalties like this. So
yeah, so, okay, well, we won't get into the contract and et cetera and the value and what it could get. We'll have ample opportunities in the next few months and years. There's 3 years left in the deal to revisit that topic. But, I mean, after 25 minutes of Brendan Gallagher, I think we can move on. And we'll wait for the decision and react on it in our next podcast. But for now, I mean, we both agree also regarding Martin Saint-Louis' stubbornness about one specific combination, and it's always resorting back to putting Josh Anderson with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield. Suzuki and Caulfield, their line had ups and downs. They have good nights, bad nights. With Slafkovský, for the most part, I thought that they did a decent job. That Slafkovský
did a great job.
Generally
speaking, they did a great job. Like it's yes, they had some lulls while the Canadians had some lulls, but I mean honestly, that line for the better part of a month has been running the show, you know.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of those two bad losses against Ottawa and Boston, where anyway. But yeah, for the most part, I mean, this is a team that's such lacking depth at this point. They turned to that line to carry them more often than not. And Slafkovský is certainly not the scapegoat and all that. And yet, Martin Saint-Louis thought that in the third period of the game against Ottawa, the second one, he mixed things up and brought back Anderson with Suzuki and Caulfield, like in the good old days, and decided to keep that against the Islanders. And the Canadians overall seem to crater offensively in terms of puck possession, and that's mainly in part because of that line, who was really buried in terms of puck possession against Horvat, Lee, and Barzal. And, you know, it's easy to make the connection with what has not worked before, for some reason, did not work yet again.
Yeah, you know, Marty always, one of his favorite isms is the game speaks to you.
Yeah.
Well,
listen.
I mean, you're not listening. Yeah, you're not listening to the game, man. I mean, honestly, like, you just have to watch. There were a few shifts in that game where Josh Anderson was just not on, he was not reading the same book, let alone be on the same page. Like, he was in no way, shape, or form helping the line offensively. Just seemed to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, was just a second behind or a second ahead. Like, he was just off. And I don't know how much more evidence you need that this combination does not work. It's been for back-to-back seasons, Josh Anderson began the season on Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki's wing. Last season, it lasted a handful of games. This season, it lasted a bit longer, but still not very long before it became very obvious.
When Tyler Toffoli was here. Because he would go from Toffoli to Anderson and to Anderson to Toffoli.
So it's just it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And look, I mean, let's say, but honestly on this, I wanted to give Marty some benefit of the doubt because I was baffled when I saw that it was Anderson. You know, he played the third period in the last game. He practiced with them on Wednesday. And then, lo and behold, in warm-up, he was there. And so that line, you were mentioning being buried, that line finished with a 2.57 expected goal rate. 2.57. You heard that right.
2.57%
of the expected goals when they were on the ice were credited to the Canadians, which for those that are not math inclined means 97.43% of them were credited to the Islanders.
I'm not math inclined. For those who listened to the previous podcast, I am not math inclined. Thank you very much.
Exactly. So that was mainly for your benefit that I did that.
Thank you.
And Leroy Slafkovský gets put on a line with Sean Monahan and Yoel Armia. You know what their expected goal percentage was? 91.33.
That was the final line? Because that was in that neighborhood after two periods.
91.33. 91.33% of the expected goals when that line was on the ice were credited to the Canadians. So between the two lines, Canadians were roughly 50%. Basically, like, it evened out. So, and I remember at one point I said to you in the game where I was watching Monahan play, and I was like, Sean Monahan is going to have a career high in expected goals tonight. It's like just already in the first period, you can tell. So yes, this thing with Anderson is a stubborn thing, and there's two things about this. So the first thing is, I tried to give Marty the benefit of the doubt on this in the sense that I thought maybe he's putting Juraj Slafkovský on the Monahan line to improve that line more so than taking him away from Suzuki and Caulfield for something he might have done. Yeah. Maybe this is a way for him to balance out his lines. Like, Juraj Slafkovský is playing so well that I'm going to put him with someone else and maybe he'll get that line going. And if that was the intention, bravo, it worked. It made that line much better. So after his press conference after the game, I asked him that, and he kind of said, you know, just think of it as a rearrangement, basically. It's like, it's not a demotion, it's not a promotion, it's not, I just needed to change something. I liked how we looked in the third period of the game against Ottawa, so I decided to stick with what I did there. So, which brings me to my second point about this, which is the third period against Ottawa. And this, listen, it worked, okay? The Canadiens had an excellent first period against the Islanders. Martin, for 2 days, talked about how he hoped the third period from Ottawa would carry over into the first period, and it did. So, credit for that. But this has been numerous occasions this season where the Canadiens go into the third period of a game that they're losing pretty badly. They have a bit of a bounce back. They have a bit of a push. The other team weathers it because they're protecting a lead.
Like most teams do.
I mean, score effects.
Sit back.
Yeah. Score effects are a thing for a reason. Like, especially teams coached by Jacques Martin, who is trying to teach this team how to win. And in Jacques Martin's book, the way you win when you're up by 3 goals in the third period is you shut things down. Basically, you turn the game into a slog and you shut her down. You know, the Canadiens, and this is something Michel Therrien used to do all the time. All the time. He would have a glimmer of positivity in the third period. Be like, oh, we played better with this combination. Let's go into the next game with that combination. And there's also something that Marty used to not do. Marty, for the longest time, would switch up his lines in the middle of a game, but by the next game, he would go right back to what they were. And there was a certain notion of continuity needed and what have you. And I think that was, you know, maybe he liked continuity too much, but I think there was something good about that where he could recognize that, okay, I did what I had to do in this game. It doesn't mean I have to redraw the whole thing. I don't have to redo the whole thing. I can go back to what was working before and have faith in that. So
yeah, exactly. Those are the two things. That shows belief. When you go back to what you had conceived, and even though you changed it along the way because on a certain night it didn't work, it shows belief in what you've built, you know, and say, okay, I trust that. I trust my decision making and, you know, the reasons why I put these guys together in the first place. So at the first hiccup, I should not necessarily be distracted from those motivations and
from score effects,
especially score effects. Yeah, yes. Exactly. But yeah, no, it's true. And clearly I'm thinking of Michel Therrien, who used to do that too, also all the time. And after that, he would take the blender out, make all sorts of line combinations. And he would ask, well, what do you see in those three guys together? And would come up with explanations. But he can come up with explanations for any potential line combination. It's when it's time to justify it. But there are certain ones that work better than others. And my point is that when it comes to Anderson with Suzuki and Caulfield, the one thing we know is that it doesn't work. This season, and just in terms of, high danger chances. When the three of them are together, they got 21% of the high danger chances. That's a bad ratio. When Anderson's not with them and Caulfield and Suzuki have another line with them, another winger.
Player, yeah.
50%.
Yeah.
So.
And what is it with Slafkovský?
Let me tell you, what is it with Slafkovský? I guess it's certainly, it must hover probably around the 52 to 53.
I would guess it's closer to 60.
Okay.
That would be my guess.
Drum roll. It is 49.5.
Oh, really? That's surprising. That means it must have been pretty bad in the last few games, which would lead to a change like this. But this is something that, you know, like, what are we looking for in this Canadian season? You're looking for glimmers of the future. You're looking for, like, I'm at least focusing on elements of this team that will be there through this whole process. So that's why I look closer at a Caden Gooley, or I look closer at even an Arbor Jacki, or like Justin Barron when he was here. But when those three guys got put together, the line that the Canadians envisioned them being from the moment Slafkovský was drafted, you know, this is what they thought.
Yeah.
They put Suzuki and Caulfield's jersey in the dressing room and had Slafkovský sit between them, for crying out loud. Like, I mean, it was on draft night. And so, and even Suzuki said that when they drafted him, that's what he envisioned. So it was cool to see it come together, and it would have been cool to let it play out, to let them play themselves out of a slump, you know, and kind of lead the team out of a slump. And so it's not the end of the world they changed the line, but and Marty made a point of mentioning this. He's like, when I played, I would go from Vinny to Richie to Vinny to Richie, and just based on how things were going and over the course of the season, it'll happen. And he's going to put Slafkovský back on that line at some point. He might even do it on Saturday. I don't know. But
that's fine. That's fine. It's not the fact that he took Slafkovský away from them that's a problem.
No, it's the Anderson.
The Anderson part.
It's the Anderson part, yes. And that's what I was getting at. And it's like, it's, you know, I don't know how many alternatives he had, but any other player, I would have rather seen Harvey Pinard play with them than Josh Anderson. You know, like, I mean, you could put Gallagher with them. You could have put anyone, literally any other week. Tanner Pearson I would rather see than Josh Anderson. Like, it's honestly, like, any other option would have been better. Because it's just, there's no, you know, you always talk about a sample size. Well, geez, the sample size is massive, suggesting that this line does not work, will not work. There are no circumstances under which Josh Anderson will work with these two players. He's been given enough opportunities. Just accept it and move on.
And he's had very good games, Anderson, with other line mates. On other lines, he's had good games. So. Yeah. You know, stick it to keep it to where it works. And yeah, Raphaël Hervé-Pinard will come useful, but I think that right now they can, especially with Gallagher being suspended now, because he formed a duo with Evans for quite a while now. But you can tell that you have Caulfield and Suzuki as a duo. Now Monahan and Armia have become a duo. And those two duos are what Martin Saint-Louis will work around to fill the rest of his lineup.
Yeah, and just as an aside, I think it's worth pointing out, when Marty was asked about Sean Monahan and how his play has improved, he went on and on about Yoel Armia.
Yeah.
And Yoel Armia's impact on that. So kudos to Yoel Armia. Honestly, like, it's been a tough season for him. A lot of people just sort of wrote him off. He looked like a guy that was worth writing off for a good chunk of the season. Definitely in training camp. Went to Laval. Didn't complain. Played well there. Yeah. Was described as a leader in that room. Gets called back. Had that lull. He wasn't playing great. Took those penalties, Carolina and Florida. And now he's playing tremendous. And... he's a really, really effective player and pain in the ass to play against player when he's playing like this. Like, he's a really useful player. He's still overpaid. He will be overpaid until the end of the contract, but he is a useful player that is difficult to play against. He's a difficult opponent because he's just has so many things that are out of the ordinary. Board battles, having a very good stick. Neutral zone, you know, causing turnovers in the neutral zone, killing penalties, just getting in passing lanes, just doing all sorts of really annoying things that disruptive things to the opposing play. And so good for you, Yoel. I think I'm going to have to talk to him about this soon. I don't think anyone has talked. I think Yoel Armia has done like two interviews all season.
Yeah.
The entire media corps is afraid of talking to him because he doesn't talk.
They're giving up. They're giving up because they don't get anything.
I'm not giving up. I'm going to ask to talk to him the next time I can.
That's good.
When they come back from the All-Star break, I will ask to talk to Yoel Armia. Yeah.
That's good. He's your unsung hero of January's
Molson Cup. Yeah. If there was a Jacques Beauchamp trophy for January, it'd be Joel Armia.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. So, Armia's been useful with Monahan. Monahan has seen plenty of ice lately. Has been very good too. Jake Evans been useful too. But there was an instance earlier this week where the Canadiens played with three centermen. After the rather puzzling demotion of Mitchell Stevens to the American League. Puzzling. Well, the easy explanation is that Tanner Pearson was coming back. They had to send somebody down, and Stephens was the one that they had the biggest certainty that he wouldn't be claimed on waivers. So it was an easy fix. But in the meantime, that's the Canadians didn't have
a good explanation.
I know, but it's a reason. Listen,
I know. I'm just saying. It is the easiest explanation, but it's just not. It's still not a good one. But anyway,
That's why I'm bringing it up to you now, because they played with three centermen. Honestly, it looked, you know, all those times where we see like 11-7 setups, and the defensemen hate playing at 7D because it messes up the pairings and all that, and they shift from one to the other, and and. So they don't like it. And it's a well-documented fact in hockey that defensemen don't like playing 7D. But playing three centermen, I feel like for the wingers, they got a taste of the equivalent of the frustration that the defensemen get when they play 7D, because they got rotated and changed line constantly. Monahan and Evans had easily four wingers each that they played pretty much on par in that one game against Ottawa. And finally, it was fixed, and Lucas Condotta was called up. And so it's going to be, most obviously, a situation where they're going to use that spot to try guys and see where they're at in their development and use it, you know, as a bit of revolving doors. I don't know if it's only maybe that Condotta will be here until just Alex Newhook comes back. I mean, he skated in his full gear today in Brassard. But the Canadians had the opportunity to pick up a guy on the waiver wire, Adam Ruzicka from Calgary. They chose to pass. Nick Bonino was put on waivers. The whole league passed because, let's face it, Bonino's at the end of the road and his legs are shot. So that's where they're at. And also, they chose to keep maybe, I don't know how big in the picture that is, but they're trying to keep their number of contracts as low as possible approaching trade deadlines. So,
yeah, I mean, there's that. And I just do think that they like the idea that Lucas Condotta's up, you know? I don't know. Maybe Jan Meshack will get a shot at some point. Maybe they can give him a look for a few games. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that they could, but I feel like it's just worth going over just how ludicrous that situation was. And it's just one game. It's not the end of the world, but it's a very odd way for an NHL team to manage their roster when there's a game to be played. Not just any game, a game against a team that spanked you 6-2 in Ottawa. You're coming off two games where you just gave up 15 goals in two games. You gave up nine in Boston. You have this game and you decide to purposely go with three centers. Mm-hmm. Like, I asked Suzuki about it after the game. I was like, when you saw that you were dressing three centers, like, what was your reaction? And he's like, well, to be honest with you, when I saw that they put Stevie, who was Mitchell Stevens, when I saw that they put Stevie on waivers, I was a little shocked because I was like, well, now we have three centers. Like, how are we gonna do that? You know, like, he didn't say it, but it kind of, the vibe was like, what are we even doing here? Like, what's going on? You know, kind of thing. Like you want me to go out and like try my best to win a game when you're not trying your best to win a game? Like, as far as management's concerned, like you're sending, that's the message you're kind of sending to your players, you know, like they're sitting there wondering like, why are we doing this? Cause you mentioned Tanner Pearson's coming back. Yes. He's a winger. And you mentioned Mitchell Stevens was likeliest to get through waivers. Yes, 100%. And he did get through waivers. But you had a waiver-exempt player on your team, Joshua Roy, a winger, that you could have sent down easily. Now, if the argument was, well, we wanted to keep Joshua Roy, he had earned a game, he had earned his way. Jesus, he had earned staying. Like he played well enough to deserve to stay, and so we want to send him a message that you're playing well. It's a meritocracy, so we kept you and we did all these gymnastics. We put a guy on waivers, risked losing him, sent him down, played a game with three centers. Also, we can keep you in the lineup. And then what happens the day after the game? They send him down. So it's like, what are they doing? Like, what was that whole series of things? And the other thing, you mentioned all the wingers being rotated. Why were they being rotated? Because Michael Pizzetta was in the lineup and didn't play after the first period. That's why. Because otherwise, if you have four sets of wingers, you have eight wingers and three centermen, it's actually not that disruptive. It's the three centermen just get to play more. You keep your wingers together, and the three centers rotate through them. Or the three centers take turns playing with the fourth line, basically. It's not that hard to manage.
Yeah, but still, you amputate your bench after the first period in order to run more smoothly.
But no, but you don't. If you didn't amputate your bench, if you didn't sit Pizzetta from the first period, from first intermission on, you could run that smoothly. It's not that. We see it all the time. You just one shift, Suzuki goes on the fourth line. Next shift, the fourth line's next shift. Evans goes with the fourth line. The fourth line's next shift. Monahan goes with the fourth line. You continue like that. It wouldn't be that difficult. But they sat Pizzetta after the first. Pizzetta was in the lineup. Why? Because they were playing against Ottawa, and it might get rough. Marty said, I wanted to have Michael Pizzetta on my bench. But it was Arbor Jacki's first game back, which would have been a good reason to go 11-7 because you don't know what you're going to get from him. He's been in Laval for a while. If you want to give yourself insurance on D, go 11-7, and if you're worried about it getting rough, you got Jacki.
Yeah.
And so that was another puzzling thing about that game. And all of it just, if you look at it from the point of view of the players, like from the outside, none of this is all that consequential, right? It's really like, who cares? Like, does it really matter that much? But if you're a player on that team, having gone through the two games you just went through, looking at Ottawa as an opportunity to get back at them for the game that the licking they gave you in Ottawa, 6-2, get back to playing decent hockey after having a total collapse in Boston in the third period, a game that they were in for 40 minutes. Let's not forget. They played well for 40 minutes of that game. Well, they were in the game. I don't know if they were playing all that well, but they were in the game and just kind of collapsed late. And so for that, you would think from a player's point of view, like, okay, my coaches and my management team are going to put us in the best position to succeed here because we need to win this game. And it was the opposite of that.
Yeah, no, it was. And even after the game, Suzuki said it's tough for the wingers to go through this, to go through all those changes. Me, I didn't rotate all that much. They double shifted HP and Monahan more, which is certainly weird and interesting. That's what he said. So I said, okay. Also, he's not too pleased because he must have thought he'd be the one that would be double shifted. Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of games this season, at least more than north of 20, where he played more than in that game where there were three centermen.
Yeah, so, and that's because John Cooper likes going 11-7, especially in the playoffs, because it allows him to get Kucherov on the ice more. It allows him to get his best players on the ice more. And that's why Suzuki said, you know, I don't mind going three centers. I get on the ice more. I wasn't there for him saying that, which was certainly weird and interesting. That's great.
Yeah.
But all that to say, like, it's not really all that consequential, but it's just, I think that there's going to be some roster tinkering that has to be done, especially after the trade deadline. There's like between now and the end of the season, there's going to be moves made. You know, if they're going to run a rotation at fourth line center, then, you know, so be it. Like, why not take advantage of the situation? But I think this team has to keep in mind what the players are thinking and how they digest the decisions that they make. That's the lesson here, is that you might have your own reasons. And frankly, I still don't know what the reasoning, what possible logical reasoning there was for what happened on Tuesday against the Senators. I don't understand. Like, there's nothing, there's no good explanation that you can really give me that would convince me that that was the way to do it. But whatever it is, and whatever other things they do this season, I think in the back of their minds, they have to keep the notion that how are our players going to digest this information? What, how are they going to receive it? You don't want to do, you don't want to make every decision based on how your players receive it. But I think in circumstances like this, I think that was overlooked. I don't think the Canadians took that into consideration.
Well, especially since there was an impression last season that there was a bit of a disconnect between the ultimate interest or preference of management versus what was going on at ice level when it came to competitiveness. Uh-huh. And there was some sort of a refreshed understanding and agreement that everybody would be on the same page, because everybody at every level of the Bell Center this year, everybody wanted to win. But when you make decisions like these, you don't send a message to your players that you're building the most optimal lineup to help you win on that day. And it's not the first. Look, the carrying three goalies, that takes you one skater less to give you options. Keeping Gustav Lindstrom and having him sit for a month just because you don't want to lose a right-handed shot, and ultimately you lose him on waivers on the day that one team in particular could have that need. And when you keep eight defensemen and you don't play that defenseman, well, because of the three goalies, you're down to 12 forwards. Again, it's not optimal. Less flexibility for Martin Saint-Louis. So those are decisions that were all originating from the fact that we don't want to lose players on waivers because it'll hurt our depth. And I can't help but look at this current situation and say, isn't it more of the same, where instead they sent Stephens down because they're concerned that they might lose Pizzetta or Ulonen on waivers if they're choosing to do so? Because, the possibility is certainly
You didn't much even have higher. To. You didn't even have to. You had a guy who didn't need waivers lineup.
You could just send
There was no need. There was no need to risk losing anyone. There was no need to risk losing anyone. Because they could have lost Stephens. That actually would have hurt them. Because Mitchell Stephens remains the best candidate to be the fourth line center of this team right now. And he's a very important player to Laval. Like, he's very important to them. But they didn't have to risk losing him. Listen, the risk was very minimal. There's very, very low chance that anyone's going to pick him up. But you never know. It's just, the whole thing's bizarre. It was odd. It was odd.
Yeah. Maybe that they're just stock-taking. To your point regarding, trade deadline, maybe that they're also looking, okay, what do we got in terms of depth players that could help us down the stretch? I mean, Pizzetta caused a huge surprise 2 years ago, and he ended up being a marginal NHL player, but I certainly have not seen that coming. Maybe they have the same thing in Condota, and 2 years from now we'll look at Condota and say, he's a great 13 forward on the team, but he brings size and he's versatile and whatnot. Maybe that's what we'll talk about in two years from now, and those little stints could help the Canadians figure that out.
Yeah, maybe they'll give Philippe Maillet a look, although he's on an AHL deal, right?
No, he's on an NHL deal.
He's on
a two-way deal, so I think that it would be more Elias Anderson rather than Philippe Maillet, I think.
But why not both? I mean, I know Philippe Maillet is 30, he's even more, 31. Yeah. So, anyhow, that's actually a good segue to our Feature Friday.
Let's make that quick though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
on a deadline.
Yeah. So, we're not going to talk about a prospect in particular. We're just going to talk about actually the Laval Rocket. They are rocketing up the standings. I'm sorry. That's bad. I actually didn't do that intentionally, but they are rocketing up the standings.
My God, it's as if you work for NHL.com.
Yeah, I know.
With headlines like that.
You can take the boy out of NHL.com. You cannot take NHL.com out of the boy. So I was talking to Arbor Jacki about this the other day. And so he was mentioning how when he got there, this would have been early December when he got sent down. You know, the Rocket had lost 9 games in a row. And he said, I got there and the place was depressing. It was depressing. Guys were not feeling confident. They were not having fun. It was just a bad environment. And I think Jacki's arrival, and not only his arrival on the ice, but his personality arriving in that room, I think had an impact on this team. You know, he said we started having fun more. We were just, you know, we were just playing. It got a lot less heavy. We started winning a little bit. And now they're just rolling. I mean, they are basically tied for third in the North Division. They've gone from just about last to third. And so what I told Arbor is repeating what J.F. Hulls said at development camp in July. He said it at the rookie camp in September and was steadfast. He's like, we are going to have trouble until Christmas. And after Christmas, we'll figure it out and things will go better. You look at the Rockets since December 29th, and they can't lose a game. I mean, I think their only loss came in overtime or a shootout, but they picked up a point, but they've won every other game. I have never seen a coach be as predictive, like Nostradamus-like prediction as J.F. Hull. Like, it's astonishing.
He's right on the money, yeah? Yeah.
He's right on the money. And it's funny, like, we talked to him, or maybe –
during the time that Jacki was there, so
– Yeah, exactly. And
early January.
I asked him. Actually, this was before I went there for Jacki's first game. And so they were in the middle of this. And I remember I asked him, I said, you said until Christmas it's going to be difficult and you're not at Christmas yet. So do you still see a possibility? He's like, well, yeah, we're not at Christmas and it is difficult. And you can just see it was heavy. It was weighing on him. Like, it was like, it is difficult. I knew it would be and it is. But hopefully, like, we're just not getting, you know, our young players are not figuring it out. They're not progressing the way I had hoped. So it's a little bit more difficult than I had anticipated. And then he talked about Joshua Hua, who at that point was going through a slump. And he said, you know, he has a good game here. And then the other night he was bad. He had a bad game. Riley Kidney, good game here, bad. And he just started one by one naming off the young players on the team that were letting him down, that were disappointing him. And then less than a month later, a few weeks later, they can't lose. And so I think J.F. Hull deserves a decent amount of credit because he's, you know, they're the hottest team. They're the hottest team in the NHL right now.
Yeah. They're in a playoff spot. That's pretty.
Yeah. And so they just need to keep that going. And frankly, getting Mitchell Stevens back is a boon. Getting Justin Barron is a boon for them. And I'm not saying that that has to be the priority for the Canadiens. Let's be clear on that. The priority is in Montreal. But I do think getting Laval to the playoffs and giving them a fighting chance is worth prioritizing to some extent for the Canadiens and being a factor in their decision-making, especially on trade deadline day when they have to decide which players will be papered to Laval to be eligible for the playoffs.
So I think that Jacki going to Laval and helping Logan Mailloux find another step, another level was a key there.
He wouldn't have been an all-star otherwise.
No.
Yeah.
So Emil Lineman being healthy and back, that's good for them. Elias Anderson being healthy and back, very good for them. Jakub Dobesh, finally, he's one guy that had a tough first third of the season, really struggled. And he finally found his marks, and he's now backed up by this Finnish journeyman, Kazimir Keskisuo, who's on a professional tryout contract.
You should all check out his YouTube channel.
He won all 4 games that he started with a 196 goal against average. And, you know, for having a guy like that who's experienced, I mean, he's 30 years old. it's a good lesson for the Laval Rocket. Never go with two inexperienced goalies. Make sure that you have one at least who's more seasoned and can help out. Because the balance that he brought around the net, not only when he played, but also helping Dobesh, has been very helpful for the Laval Rocket. So there's many things, many contributing factors, but it's fun because if the fans in the Montreal Canadiens have a chance to go to see the Rocket, when they're going to be in the playoff run later in the season, I mean, the atmosphere is always rocking, but it's going to be pretty special.
You did it too.
You know, in crunch time. So
you did it too. You made a bad Rocket pun. Just like me. Atmosphere's rocking. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even notice. Is that the same? Okay.
But it would be would be nice to – I mean, it would be cool for the AHL affiliate to – the Canadiens AHL affiliate to make a playoff run. You know, it's like it's been – you know, Laval's never done it, like made a deep run.
Yeah.
We'll see if that's a possibility this year with this team. So it's – but it's definitely – you know, I'm not part of the Laval Rocket marketing team, but if you do want an entertaining night of hockey at a more affordable price in a great building, Laval Rocket games are well worth the trip, and it's a great game experience. They actually do a very good job on game presentation. I think some elements of their game presentation are even better than the Canadiens on some nights. So
yes,
I would highly recommend it heading out there. But it's something. It's a real positive development for the Canadiens because the way things were trending in Laval, like we had a lot of fans thinking that Chiafoul should be fired. Like, what's going on there? This is a disaster. Young teams don't generally succeed in the AHL, far less so than they do in the NHL, actually. He's done a really good job. Chiafoul has really done a good job. And again, called this so far in advance exactly how this was going to go. He does credit for that as well.
All right, so we'll wrap this up. Two housekeeping notes. First, if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please give us a 5-star rating. Drop us a comment. If you watch us on YouTube, well, don't forget to subscribe to the SDPN channel. Tons of great podcasts there. And don't hesitate to send us your question for our Monday mailbag. You can do so on Twitter at Basu and Godin. Or you can write us an email at basuandgodin@gmail.com. So that's it for this episode of The Notebook. So we wish everybody a good weekend. Arpin, enjoy yours, man.
Enjoy yours as well. We'll be back on Monday, even though the Canadiens are entering their bye week and the All-Star break. But we will be here to talk to you about more outrage. More outrage over inconsequential things coming right up on Monday. Enjoy your weekend, everyone.